Hey, it's Free Talk Live. Welcome to the program. The number, if you want to join us here, where you can take control of the airwaves, bring up whatever's on your mind, it's 603-283-6160. That's 603-283-6160. Here in the studio tonight, it's Ian.
And Chris.
And things are a little bit different here tonight because we have a film crew here in the studio. So for those of you watching to our feed at home over at, I think the best place to go would be video.freetalklive.com for our Odyssey stream. You can see some guys with cameras in the background. There's actually a French film crew in town today, and they've been visiting with us. I spent several hours with them this morning being interviewed, and I think you picked up the crew at some point and took them down to the yep. Bitcoin embassy.
Yeah. Yeah. It was an interesting day. Lots going on in Keene. There's always lots going on around here, but, definitely a little bit different.
Yeah. It was actually interesting because as soon as they left, I managed to like get an hour's worth of a nap in, and I was awakened cause I had to get up early this morning for their visit. And I was awakened by Nikki calling cause she says the gas guys are here. Cause what happened in Keene, where we live in southwestern New Hampshire, a few days ago, I don't know if you have the gas lines at your house.
Yeah, we don't have gas all out in West Keene.
So here in the downtown area, there's a lot of houses that have a gas feed coming to them, and something happened at the facility a few days ago.
Didn't they run out of gas?
No, something broke.
Oh,
and they were no longer able to supply gas to any of their Keene customers, basically. And it's been down for like 3 days. Luckily, it's been pretty warm so far this fall, so it's not like it's freezing cold or anything like that. But anyway, the dude that comes in to turn the gas back on today and like relight the burner, he goes, I'm taking him down in the basement, taking him down to the pipes, and he goes, "Hey man, are you one of the Crypto Six?"
Oh yeah.
And I said to him, "Yeah, I'm one of them." He says, "Yeah, I saw the cop block sticker outside on the porch. I figured it was one of you guys." And turns out the dude's a Free Stater.
Oh, cool.
And
there are so many people, so many freesters I've never even met. And it's so weird. Like, you think people would come out to things and you'd know them, but there's so many people here now. You can't know everybody.
Right. And he's one of those that, I asked him a few questions and like, well, hey, how long have you been here? And he says he'd been in New Hampshire for a decade and he'd moved up from Massachusetts. So he didn't have to go far to come up here and join this migration of liberty-loving activists. But what he said was he hadn't really kind of gone out to meet anyone until just the last year. So I guess COVID maybe pushed him over the edge. Or he's like, all right, time to meet my neighbors, the other libertarians here. And so he says now he's got more friends than he ever had before.
Cool.
Like, he's just overwhelmed with the amount of people that he's met and knows because of this movement. So it was really cool. It's like one of those things where there's just so many, like you said, they're all over the place and you don't even know who they all are.
I mean, we had one Friday, we had, three or four families. There was a dozen people, and most of the people at the crypto meetup were new people. Like, we had fewer people who were like regulars or people that I knew than we had people I didn't know. There was like two or three of us, and then like everybody else was from out of town. And that was unusual because usually we have more people that I know, we might have five or six people, but mm-hmm. I know them all. And maybe there'll be one or two people that come out, but a dozen people? I've never had that happen before, except for, we did have that one time where we had like 20 people come out. But
I think that was within the last year. So,
yeah, that was like, also within the last year to come. But they were checking out New Hampshire.
That's
more
what most
so.
People do before they move, right?
Like, they gotta
make sure that everything's, what they think it's going to be, that this is real, that there really are, freedom-loving people
absolutely.
Here. And there really are. So I just thought that was just one of those cool, like, random stories of, oh, look, here's one of these hidden Free Staters.
Absolutely.
And that's the thing. Like, these guys are all over the place, and more of them are coming in. You don't know who they all are. You'll never know who they all are. They're not centrally controlled. There's no central tracking. Yes, the Free State Project does have a sign-up, but a lot of people don't even sign up for it. They just move here.
You know what's interesting is there was a picture, I think, from the other night, and I think you said you didn't recognize anybody in the picture. Like, it was a group of freestaters.
Yeah, but that was for the Seacoast, so that's probably why.
But yeah.
I didn't notice anybody.
But usually, like, people from the Seacoast and all over New Hampshire come out to, like, the Porcupine Freedom Festival and Fork Fest. So, like, still, at least in the past, you would still know people in other towns and cities in New Hampshire, but not recognizing a single person?
Yeah, that seemed a little unprecedented.
That's unprecedented. I think
So, you know, we're actually, I've always got stuff in the news regarding cryptocurrency, and since the guys are here, they're actually shooting a crypto-related piece. Can I say what for? Can I say what channel? Can I plug that? Okay, so Ledger. For those that aren't familiar, there are things called hardware wallets, and Ledger is one of the probably most popular out there. I don't know if it's the best seller, but it's got to be one of the top two or three best-selling hardware wallets out there. And a hardware wallet is something that allows someone to store cryptocurrency, not just Bitcoin, but usually several other alternatives like Bitcoin Cash or Dash or something like that, storing that cryptocurrency in a way that is basically offline. It's essentially separated from any kind of internet connection. And so the hardware wallet is ostensibly, besides maybe like a paper backup wallet, a hardware wallet is probably the one of the best, most safer ways.
Kind of like a firewall. I don't know if you could say offline, but certainly like it's like a firewall, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's literally a piece of hardware that you can store in a fireproof safe or something like that and be relatively secure that your crypto is safe.
Yeah. You basically have to press some buttons on the physical device to authorize each transaction. So like if, for example, you have a Windows system and you have malware on it, you know, normally, without this, you know, your malware could, you know, steal your what's called your private key and they could get access to all your crypto. But with one of these hardware wallets, they can't do that. I don't know if they can. They might still be able to get access to like a certain amount that you're sending at most, but they wouldn't be able to get access to the private key, which would give them access to all your cryptocurrency.
Yeah. So definitely check them out. And they've got a YouTube channel where they're doing like shorts on various different crypto related things across the planet. So they went to El Salvador. They were telling me recently.
Were they one of the?
Yeah.
They
checked out what was going on down there. So they did a piece about that. And then they went to the Bitcoin City, which is one of our competitors, Chris. I'd heard about the Bitcoin City before, and it's in the Netherlands. And there's like 150,000 people in the city. So it's a lot larger than Keene, where we live, where there's maybe like 23,000 on a college season or whatever the college is in session here. And so I don't know what the total number of businesses that the Crypto City has, or the Bitcoin City as they call it, because they only accept Bitcoin at the businesses in Bitcoin City.
It's interesting. We're talking about a little bit about this here, and I'm curious what the what's the actual usage versus the acceptance, right? Because we're always talking about acceptance in Keene, and one of the things I seem to find when I leave New Hampshire, at least, is you go places, and if you go to try and pay in Bitcoin, right, or cryptocurrency, you will find that the cashier doesn't actually know how to accept it. And so there's places supposedly accepting it.
It's always a disappointment.
But that's why it's funny because I used to, especially post 2 years ago, I used to go to conferences across the United States and around the world even. Mm-hmm. And every time I would go into a place that like supposedly took it, it's like they didn't actually know how to accept it. And it's like in Keene or anywhere in New Hampshire, really, I go and I never run into that problem. So that's why I'm kind of curious.
It has
what
happened.
It
has happened in New Hampshire. Like, for instance, I was telling the film crew.
Oh, like with a new employee or something?
Well, that happens. But also the burger place in downtown Keene kind of fell off the radar last year because they started enforcing the mask mandate.
Yeah, they kind of blocked us.
And our, you know, libertarians are like, screw that. I mean, we love your food, but, you know, we're not going to put on these masks.
They were still getting people going in trying to pay with cryptocurrency. They just would run into problems because I think it was a little bit more complicated. So what happened was they changed out their point of sale system.
Oh.
And so their new point of sale system wasn't set up for the cryptocurrency. So they still had the tablet, but that it wasn't working. And that's really what happened.
They changed something.
Yeah, it wasn't that we stopped going. I mean, we did. Many of us did stop going. But
that's a huge factor. Like if the people who are into crypto don't actually go out and spend it, then eventually a business who's willing to accept the crypto is just going to stop.
Right.
And there's an example of that happened in Manchester. They had a place called, I think it was Dancing Lion Chocolate.
Oh, yeah, I remember them.
Yeah, they were taking crypto.
I think it was Nashua, though.
No, it's Manchester.
Was it Manchester?
Maybe they have one in Nashua, but there was the one in Manchester was the one. It was like on Elm Street. And I remember calling them a couple years ago because I was updating the crypto map or the coin map. And I asked the guy if he was still accepting it. And he said he'd stopped because no one came in to spend it. So it's like, well, if you don't go and spend crypto, they're not going to keep it up. You know, they're not going to keep the tablet charged and keep training employees.
It's one of the great things about living in Keene. It's small enough where you don't have to worry about people not taking it anymore.
No doubt. We got a good group here. There's more coming up. You can join us on Free Talk Live. It's Free Talk Live. Open the phones. If you want to join us here, the number 603-283-6160. That's 603-283-6160. With you in the studio tonight, it's Ian.
and Chris.
And Free Talk Live is brought to you by Bitcoin.com. You want to go and learn the basics about cryptocurrency like Bitcoin and Bitcoin Cash. Maybe you've heard that Bitcoin just hit a record high earlier this week, just I think 2 days ago at so this point.
66,000, was it?
Yeah, it was almost 67. Almost 67. Okay. Almost made it there.
I was saying 68. Somebody else was saying 66. Yeah. I'm like, well, technically, depends on which exchange you're looking at. But
we could be at 100 by the end of the year. I mean, that is.
I'm crossing my fingers.
A realistic possibility. Of course, anything's possible. It could go down. You never know.
Could.
But if you want to go learn the basics, hit up Bitcoin.com. Click Get Started at the top of the page, and then you'll get some introductory videos. You can watch the first one. If you're short on time, that's going to take you three minutes of your life. And you'll get down some of the basics about what makes cryptocurrency like Bitcoin and Bitcoin Cash different and special, and why this is one of the most, if not the most, important financial technology to come across in lifetimes, in generations. It's incredibly important. And so take your time, go and learn about it at Bitcoin.com. And you can also get the latest news headlines over at news.bitcoin.com, which they're updated every single day. Once again, that's news.bitcoin.com. So every now and then, there's a hit piece that comes out about cryptocurrency.
I love hit pieces.
And yeah, it's always fun to address the hit pieces.
They're just so entertaining. Like, and you know, they lie left and right about stuff, and they try to make things sound scary, and then it's like, oh, that's not really scary. That's normal. And
You mean like terrorism and drug dealers?
Right, right. Or like, you know, they try to scare people with like, oh, it's highly variable. And it's like, yeah, sort of. But I mean, if you go with the US dollar or dirty fiat, it's always going down, right? So like if Bitcoin goes down a little bit, or cryptocurrencies go down a little bit, that's not that big of a deal if they go up more than they go down.
And they do.
Right. And so in the long term, you're still better off with cryptocurrency, even though it's, you know, it varies a little bit in price, right?
Yep. In fact, you're even better off than gold. Right?
Yeah, because exactly. That's the point. It's like, it goes down, sure, you lose a little bit of money, but really you're not, because in the end, you're making more than you're losing.
Somebody made the point on, I think it was Twitter today, I think it was Mandrick, who posted that like gold just hit $1,800 an ounce. Okay, yeah, that's great news, except he pointed out that when Bitcoin was $5 a Bitcoin, gold was still $1,800 an ounce. So Bitcoin has done a lot. I mean, I love gold. I love precious metals. I think they're beautiful and they're useful and they're valuable. And
I mean, I was even showing them off today. And
the goldbacks?
Yeah, the goldbacks. Yeah. And it's interesting because Fucking Great's now accepting them.
Get out of here.
Yeah, just starting yesterday, as of yesterday, apparently.
Oh, that is so exciting.
So I didn't actually pay with goldbacks. I had goldbacks, but I decided to still pay with crypto because I'm just, I have to say, I'm still a crypto.
By the way, that's the pho noodle place that you're referring to.
Cryptocurrency fan, but I do have crypto. I mean, I do have goldbacks as well as crypto. So I certainly do pay with goldbacks on occasion.
They're the perfect combination. I mean, what a great way to get out of the government money. Because not everybody's ready for cryptocurrency. I mean, it's come along a lot in 13 years. It's easier than it's ever been, but there's still some people that, you know, they're not ready for it. They're too old or whatever, and they get gold, though. They get it.
It's interesting, too, because it's like, okay, well, some people don't like cryptocurrency, but they love gold.
Yeah.
And other people love cryptocurrency, but they're not as big of a fan of gold.
Mm-hmm.
But if you get both groups, you know, off of the dirty fiat, off of U.S. dollars or euros and so on, all of a sudden, you actually have like a freer, more peaceful, you know, world, effectively.
Right. Exactly. The less people are relying on government money, or as you call it, I love dirty fiat. That's great.
I know. I wish more people would use the word dirty fiat. However, if you start using it like in exchange, like I always ask, do you accept dirty fiat at McDonald's or, you know, Wendy's or wherever I'm going?
And it really throws them off. Right?
Most of the time, they have no idea what you're talking about.
All right, so let me jump into the story here, and we'll see what they have to say. This is from a website called Unheard.com. Greg Barker, a supposed independent journalist here, he says, Wall Street, the Federal Reserve, and the financial arm of Silicon Valley can't believe their luck. The cryptocurrency movement, the very rebellion that set out to defeat their hegemony, has provided them with the necessary technology to become even more dominant. When Bitcoin, the first ever cryptocurrency, was launched in 2008, not quite, yeah, I think it was 2009 when it officially came out, but it was hoped that its blockchain technology, which records transactions and cannot be hacked, would spark a digital revolution. If a transaction could be carried out securely without the need for an established bank, it would, we were promised, mark the end of corporate capitalism and the dawn of a new era of decentralization. Just over a decade later, however, blockchain has become the center of the financial elite's new age banking system. Indeed, behind the scenes, they're going all in on crypto. Using its very own cryptocurrency, the world's largest bank, JP Morgan, has completed its first interbank crypto trade with fellow Wall Street titan Goldman Sachs. They carried out the transaction of JPM coin. Did you hear about this JPM coin when they came out?
No, I don't know when this happened. Is this like a big deal for some reason?
I mean, in the world of bankers, I guess it's a big deal.
I don't really care about what happens in the banking world, right? Yeah. I care about how freedom is, you know, encouraged through cryptocurrencies. I'm not an investor. I don't care if you make money off it. I love it when I make money off cryptocurrency, mm-hmm. but that's not why I'm in it, you know?
Well, right. You and I are probably in it. I don't want to speak for you, but for the whole purpose of empowering the individual.
Right.
Right. And getting people to have control over their own money for the first time, if not ever, certainly in generations.
Yeah.
And that's what makes a difference here. And JP Morgan, of course, has been their CEO, Jamie Dimon, has been on the attack against Bitcoin for years. Publicly, he's made statements about how Bitcoin is useless or valueless or worthless or whatever. He's been attacking it. But then recently, JP Morgan also started allowing their retail investors to buy it.
I also find it hilarious considering it's like cryptocurrencies have, and Bitcoin specifically, has gone up more than like any stock. Like, I mean, it's the, if you're looking at it from an investment standpoint, and I hate to do this, but I admit it is the best investment in like history, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and so like for somebody to say, oh, it's, you know, it's somehow gonna hurt you, it's like, no, it's not.
So what they're pointing out here is this JPM coin is something that JP Morgan created sort of as like an interbank currency transfer system. So it's not something that you can buy. You as a, you know, regular right. person cannot just go on some exchange and buy these things.
They're effectively taking what's behind cryptocurrency and mm-hmm. Bitcoin to facilitate, to make more efficient the banking system, because the banking system can't compete with cryptocurrencies. That's just what it comes down to. In order to compete, they have to actually use the exact technology that cryptocurrencies are using.
Yeah. And so, I mean, I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing if companies like JP Morgan adopt blockchain technology. If it helps them,
I think then, if anything, that's proven we've won.
Yeah, then good for them.
Right.
And it doesn't take anything away from the success of Bitcoin. It doesn't take anything away from the unending growth, it seems, of the cryptocurrency industry.
Just because they're using cryptocurrency or the blockchain to facilitate transactions in mm-hmm. kind of a more traditional
it's
way.
Like a private blockchain,
right.
though.
Doesn't mean that you have to... You have to engage in that, right?
Right.
You don't
have to use their bank.
Right. You don't have to use their bank, right? This is the great thing about the free market. You know, with the free market, we have a choice. And mm-hmm. if you choose to use the system that isn't controlled by the banks, right, that's your choice. But you can also choose to use, if you believe in what the banks are doing, right, and the industry and all that, and the government, well, go ahead and use their system. I'm not going to stop you. I just would wish that you don't encourage it because they try to stop us all the time.
But he's got more to say about the crypto rebellion that he believes has failed. And we will talk about that. And it's just laughable, right,
from our perspective. It's hilarious.
But we'll continue here because it's a different perspective. Normally, it's all about, like you said, the terrorism, supposed, and the drug dealers and all the scaremongering. So this guy takes a bit of a different attack. And we'll continue with that here in a moment. Your thoughts are welcome. 603-283-6160. More coming up on Free Talk Live.
When Monster Hunter International discovers one of Isaac Newton's wardstones being auctioned off, they decide to steal it and use it to destroy the Chaos God once and for all. But a mysterious thief upends their plan, and it soon becomes a race against time as something much older and infinitely more evil awakens in the jungles of South America. Monster Hunter Bloodlines by New York Times bestselling author Larry Correa and Bain Books. Visit MonsterHunterNation.com for more.
Yeah. Yep, it's Free Talk Live. You can join us here. The number for you is 603-283-6160. Maybe you want to weigh in on, did the crypto revolution fail? Well, first of all, I think it's way too early to say anything like that. It's only been 13 years on the scheme of money. I mean, so far, it seems to be a major success.
Yeah, you could definitely have fooled me. Yeah. Considering how long it took for credit cards, you know, to get off the ground. I mean, it took them like 60 years, I think.
Was it that long? I thought they came out in like the 50s.
But, you know,
credit cards were pretty big in the 1980s, I think. I remember that.
So here's the thing, right? Like, so a lot of the world still doesn't have, credit cards are dominant in the United States, you know, since like maybe the late 90s. But the problem is that it doesn't mean that you can go anywhere in the world. You can go to tourist destinations around the world and use credit cards, but there's a lot of places that still don't take credit cards. So, like, you know, it's not.
Even today?
Yeah, even today.
Wow.
I mean, even in Keene, up until like this couple years ago,
there's a handful of places
we had places
that
wouldn't take credit cards. So, you know, and that's the point that I'm making, right? Like, a lot of places don't take crypto yet, but there are still places that do, and it's like credit cards back in the early days. In the early days of credit cards, the only places you could go that would take them are restaurants that were basically, you know, connected to business traveling salesmen, and I think hotels. I think that was basically the only place you could use your credit card. That doesn't mean credit cards were a failure, right? Just because they weren't accepted everywhere after a couple of years.
Yeah, and I don't even know if he's taking that approach here in the story from unheard.com, claiming that the crypto revolution is failing. That's the title of this story. He seems to be focusing not on whether or not it's been adopted, at least so far.
What other basis could you even go on?
Well, that's the thing. He's coming at it from, oh, look, the bankers are now adopting crypto, and so you're not undermining the banks. You're helping them.
Yeah, I mean, he did say something about taking down corporations, and I think that's – I don't know. Like, I don't think that was ever – I don't think I've ever heard anybody say that was one of the objectives.
Well, he didn't use that wording. He says defeat the bankers' hegemony, Wall Street, Federal Reserve, and Silicon Valley.
That's probably a fair statement because that was in the white paper for Satoshi Nakamoto.
Well, let's go on with what he claims here. He's talking about the J.P. Morgan coin, JPM coin, which is this private interbank settlement coin, basically.
Sure.
It's just, oh, a bank owes another bank money. They send this JPM coin back and forth, and you don't ever get it as a user or as an individual.
Right.
So he says, with more than a dozen institutions now signed up for it, exchanging more than $1 billion daily, a digital financial revolution is in the making. I wouldn't call that a financial revolution. It's like a technology tweak for bankers.
Yeah,
it's not a huge change.
That might be an industry, like an industry revolution within the banking system, but I wouldn't call that, like, as far as, like, you know, you and me, you know, as, like, I don't know, consumers or as, like, business owners. Like, that's not a revolution for us from our perspective.
So he says ordinary citizens, however, won't be part of it. When it was first conceived, crypto's leading advocates insisted we had entered a new era of financial autonomy. All you needed to defeat crony capitalism was a Bitcoin wallet and an internet connection. But in reality, the crypto rebellion has failed to liberate us or achieve anything else its founder Satoshi Nakamoto envisioned. Rather than producing a more open, more liberating, more financially free society, the crypto movement has empowered not just another cabal of corrupt financiers, but a hidden cartel of criminals. There it is. They threw it in.
I must be a criminal for accepting Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies from people around the world on a regular basis. I must be involved in money laundering or some other criminal enterprise. No, I sell computers, guys.
Wall Street rejects and what U.S. Senator Liz Warren has described as shadowy supercoders. I mean, I can't believe this guy even took that seriously. The whole shadow. Did you hear about that quote when it happened? Shadowy supercoders.
Yeah. I wonder, is this satire?
No, I don't think this is satire.
Because there's so many times where I read something and I think they're serious, and then I'm like, wait, no, this can't be real. I mean, they're just so wrong about so many different aspects of it. It's like, if it's not satire, it's like you really don't know what you're talking about.
You know, I was talking with the guys from the film crew about this earlier, the difference between sort of the two different sides of the Bitcoin or the cryptocurrency world. There's the side that wants to be regulated. The side that wants to, like, curry favor with the governments of the world. They want to get the government to, you know, kind of let them exist and not mess with them too much, but they're willing to be regulated in order to do that, and then the hopes that they're going to make a bunch of money. And then there's people like us that want nothing to do with regulations. Yeah. We want nothing to do with the government and all of its stupid nonsense that they try to shove down people's throats. And that seems to me to be the true, like, Satoshi Nakamoto side, because he seemed, or she, whoever it is,
absolutely,
seemed to be about giving people a way out of that system. And I got to disagree with this guy at this article. It's like, that has been a success. Look right now at the market caps of things like Bitcoin. It's over $1 trillion today. market cap of Bitcoin.
Honestly, at the end of the day, the reason it keeps going up in value is because you keep getting, you see more and more adoption. It's really not that hard to understand. It's not like there's not more Bitcoin being mined. If Bitcoin was like going away, people would be trying to unload faster than people who were trying to acquire it, right? And so you would see a decline in its value. I mean, that's just basic economics, right? Mm-hmm. But that's not happening. We're seeing the opposite of that. And it's because more people are getting on board.
Yeah, and there's more developments all the time.
Right.
More privacy coins specifically are coming out. There's this new term called DarkFi. Have you heard about this?
Yeah, not a lot. I think you might have sent me a link. Actually,
I just learned about it literally 2 days ago.
Yeah.
So there's RegFi and DarkFi. RegFi is regulated FI. And then there's finance. FI is what.
Right.
And then DarkFi is the other side of it, the privacy coins, the people that actually care about independence, the people that care about financial freedom. Those are the people on the other side of the equation. There's the big bankers, there's the Federal Reserve, there's the mega corporations, there's Wall Street, and then there's the rest of us that don't want to have anything to do with those people. And we just want to be left alone. And
peace.
Cryptocurrency, and cryptocurrency enables this,
right?
And it hasn't failed at that in any way, shape, or form. Okay, fine. JP Morgan's got their own blockchain. Good for them.
Yep.
It doesn't take anything away from me if they're able to send an interbank transfer.
I'm not even sure that's a bad thing. I mean, in theory, it lowers the costs of banks to conduct business.
I agree with
you. Which, in theory, should probably get passed on,
to
if
the
there's
customers.
Competition, then it should get passed on to customers at some point. So,
right. I have no problem. As much as I'm frustrated by the banking system, I don't hate the bankers, right? Like the local people that run banks are very nice people. Like, I've met a lot of them, and I've sat with them and talked with them, and they're not monsters, but they're working in a terrible industry that's highly regulated by government, and it sucks. I sat down with a banker years ago with Chris Reitman. We had a meeting with the president of a local bank here in town. And it's like not just one bank. They've got multiple locations in sort of southwest New Hampshire or whatever. And he was super nice, and he was frustrated by the government regulations. He wished he didn't have to deal with them,
I kind of remember this. I mean, that guy sounded like one of the nicest people that I've ever heard of anybody interacting with when it comes to banks.
Yeah. He closed my account, but,
it wasn't like his choice. And didn't he wasn't he like the one of the few people who would actually talk to you about why?
Yeah, we sat down with him for an hour.
Because most banks, they won't tell you why they're shutting your account down. It's like
it's so corporate and impersonal at these other banks.
And it's kind of crazy because it's like, and it's funny, especially, you can't say anything here, Ian, but when you're talking about like the Crypto Six and you're listening to these prosecutors in these hearings, and it's like, well, they should have known they're doing something illegal. Well, okay, who told them that they were doing something illegal? Because
nobody no
ever at any point said that, you're doing something illegal. They at most said, oh, we have to shut your account down maybe, but nobody ever said, oh, you're doing something illegal. They said, if anything, the opposite of that.
Yeah, well, actually, to your point, the New Hampshire Banking Commission specifically said, quote, we don't regulate that, with reference to Bitcoin vending machines, which the Shire Free Church, church operated.
Even the letter that was sent to the Shire Free Church by the government, the federal government, doesn't say it is illegal. They say you may require a license. It doesn't say you are required to get a license. It says that you may, which implies that
wasn't even
also
sent to the Shire Free Church. It wasn't even addressed to the Shire Free Church.
Whoever addressed to, whatever letter this is the letter they claimed, I think, was sent. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
And it doesn't say that. It says it literally implies that you may not be obligated to be regulated or registered. So.
And then they wanted you to sign up for regulation just voluntarily on your own. It's like, according to the New Hampshire banking guys, we don't have to do that. So we're not going to. Anyway, the number here if you want to join us, 603-283-6160. This guy's got more to say about why he thinks the crypto revolution has failed. But what about the evolution? Because to me, crypto is about an evolution, not starting over or, improving bankers or whatever. There's more coming up. It's Free Talk Live. Free Talk Live. The number, if you want to join us here, 603-283-6160. You can, of course, bring up whatever you want. Again, that is 603-283-6160. In the studio tonight, you've got Ian.
And Chris.
We're talking about a you know, whether you want to call it a hit piece or not, it is on unheard.com. The guy that's writing it.
Sure, sounds like it's a hit piece.
Greg Barker, yeah, it's definitely a hit piece. But it's coming at it from a little bit of a different perspective. He's actually saying the crypto revolution has failed. Not that Bitcoin doesn't work or anything like that, but and he does mention the whole, you know, terrorism, criminal allegations, which of course are completely false. I think we should address that here for just a moment. That. They've actually looked at the numbers, and I think it's the government themselves. I don't know if it was the Justice Department or whoever, but somebody in the government actually admitted that criminals use cash more than anything else.
It's actually interesting because the so-called terrorists actually the Federal Reserve actually facilitates, the federal government facilitates more terrorism, both, you know, itself directly, you know, committing terrorism, and also those they would call out as terrorists.
Yeah.
So I mean, we're talking about billions of dollars get, you know, swiped or stolen or whatever through the system, as well as people using the banks to, you know, and the government.
Yeah, sometimes the government just gives them billions of dollars or leaves billions of dollars of military equipment laying around Afghanistan whatever. Right?
I mean, when you're sending over hundreds of thousands of troops to bomb, you know, women and children in villages and then calling that collateral damage, like, I don't know. I mean, that sounds like terrorism to me.
So let me go on here with the piece. He says, its prominent members, talking about crypto, continue to run rampant around the globe, circumventing laws, regulations, and ethics to accumulate multi-billion dollar fortunes. Okay, isn't that a success story?
Isn't that capitalism?
Isn't that...
Is capitalism not okay?
Yeah, isn't the whole point of Bitcoin to circumvent the system? Because if that's true, then he's saying it worked.
Right.
he says, to accumulate multi-billion dollar fortunes, not a single country appears to want to host crypto billionaire CZ and his company Binance, the biggest cryptocurrency exchange platform in the world. Meanwhile, Brock Pierce, the billionaire co-creator of cryptocurrency Tether, which is one of the most popular stable coins, as they call it, it's a dollar-backed coin. Crypto coin token. It's currently using his wealth to engage in crypto colonialism in Puerto Rico, where dozens of entrepreneurs, and he's putting that in quotes, by the way, hope to build a new city that only uses virtual money. Again, that sounds like a pretty exciting project, if that's actually what they're doing.
I have to say I'm a little bit skeptical of the project, but at the same time, I was skeptical of Free State Project too, though, but when it first was announced. But nonetheless, I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing. It sounds like a good thing, and I wish them the best of success with it.
Sensing this rising elite is getting a free pass, the world's financial power structures have responded with a regulatory hailstorm. And as it has intensified, the more controversial outlets have tried to meet regulators' demands. Binance has tried to appear more credible by looking at a potential IPO route and appealing to regulators, while BlockFi, a cryptocurrency lender that matches all the Securities and Exchange Commission's criteria for a Ponzi scheme, has had to obey securities laws to continue operating in the U.S., with five states, New Jersey, Alabama, Texas, Vermont, and Kentucky, striking the FinTech company, that stands for Financial Technology Company, with either cease and desist, or show cause notices to prove they're not a scam.
I mean, this sounds like standard operating procedure for any company, just about. I mean, especially out of the Silicon Valley area. And even if, like, a lot of that technology, when it's disruptive, you know, they try to outlaw it, you know. It's like the buggy whip, back in the day. They tried to outlaw... I think the buggy whip dealers tried to outlaw cars or something like that back in the day.
Probably, yeah. That wouldn't surprise me.
I mean, it's just crazy.
Well, so it seems like what he's saying here is, oh, cryptocurrency has failed because centralized corporations that the government can target are being targeted. And that's not the essence of cryptocurrency. You know, the essence of cryptocurrency like Bitcoin is decentralization.
Right.
Is to get away from having a centralized hub with a bunch of corporate goons or whatever, a CEO and CTO.
You know what's funny is this is one of the reasons why I kind of like goldbacks, because we should have choices, right? A free market, you know, there should be different options to choose from.
Yeah.
And we don't even need, like, you know, some people think, oh, there could only be one. And that's not really the case, you know. You can have multiple competing options out there. And certainly in the crypto world, there's thousands, but there's only a handful of real successful
you know, cryptocurrencies, I think. But that doesn't necessarily mean, just because you have the dollar doesn't mean you can't have the euro, right? Or the Canadian dollar or the Australian dollar. You know, more competition is better. That's, you know, moral of the story.
Yeah, and if you're going to have a centralized corporation, you're going to get regulated because they can find you.
Right.
They can come to your corporate headquarters and they can target your corporate bosses and they can target your engineers and they can target all the people that, you know, matter, and then they can control your business. And that's not a surprise, and it's not an indicator that the crypto revolution has failed. It's an indicator that centralized corporations are a failure, that centralized companies are ripe for government regulation and ripe for targeting. And so that's one of the things we're actually seeing happening, and I don't know if he addresses this coming up, but the decentralized autonomous organization is now a thing. And it's a thing now because of cryptocurrency, because Dash, I think I touched on this the other night, Dash was the first decentralized autonomous organization. There have been others since then. Some have failed. Some have crashed and burned miserably, but others are going strong.
Oh, but Ian, I mean, the crazy thing about that too is like, isn't that the case for most businesses? Like, most businesses fail, right?
That's right.
So this idea that failure is somehow, and that's the crazy thing. I disagree with the idea that failure is bad. I think failure is how we learn.
Yes.
And we don't succeed without first failing a few times. You're going
to
have businesses, you're going to have projects that fail. And that's why it's not necessarily a bad thing that there's thousands of cryptocurrencies, at least.
Yeah. And thousands have died too, right? We can go look at the list of cryptos and it's like 10,000 plus cryptos right now. Most of them are completely unremarkable and, you know, not worth anything. And then there's the other ones that aren't even alive anymore that are, you know, gone because they just failed completely.
Yep.
And that's okay.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
Because there's still an increasing interest. There's still an increasing participation. There's more of these things being created, and the market competition is ripe. I mean, there's a ton of competition in the cryptocurrency sphere, and the reason why is, for the most part, the government can't touch it. The government cannot tell you that you cannot go and copy the Bitcoin code and then change the Bitcoin code or create your whole new code or whatever, like Monero did.
I mean, the government says stuff all the time. The practical reality is they can't enforce it, right?
They haven't told anyone they can't
can
copy
target
code.
I mean, individual. Sure, they haven't, because they know it would be a total failure.
Yeah.
But
it's unenforceable.
Yeah, it's effectively unenforceable. And this is the thing. It's like, you know, when you have enough people defying government often will either not do anything in response.
Yeah, they back down.
Or they will selectively target people in order to, like, kind of scare others.
Yes, like with the Crypto 6.
With the Crypto 6. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
So as for the bosses, he goes on, as for the bosses of ill-famed Tether, they recently appeared on CNBC trying to convince everyone that their currency has a one-to-one backing, meaning for each Tether in circulation, they claim to have $1 in their reserves backing it up, though they still won't perform an audit of their reserves. And look, this has been one of the questions, the open questions about Tether since the beginning.
Yeah.
They've never really been completely transparent, and yet they are the number one so-called stablecoin in the crypto marketplace with, I think, more than 60 billion Tethers in existence. So they claim that they've got enough dollars in bank accounts or investments or whatever to back up those 60 billion Tethers that they've issued into the world of cryptocurrency. Now, whether or not that's true, I don't know. But I think you pointed out earlier, if you don't care or if you're concerned about that, don't hold Tether.
Yep.
No one is forcing you to use Tether ever at any point. In fact, there are alternatives to Tether. There's probably a dozen other, at least, relatively popular stable coins that compete with Tether.
I don't know if there's a competitor that is audited, but I'd put money that there probably is somebody competing with Tether. And the thing is, I'm not a big stable coin person. So I don't know, but I bet there's competition out there that is audited, and I bet there's people who use that stable coin because of that.
I bet there is.
Yeah.
Since the U.S. government has come down hard on any entity not playing ball, some of the crypto elite have started to question whether true decentralization is a delusion. Indeed, they're starting to realize that it's a lot easier to build a fortune and keep it when they participate in the official system and follow the rules. And he's not wrong about that. There are those people who believe that appeasing the government is the best way to be wealthy and stay wealthy. And they're probably not wrong about that. Yeah. Right? Yeah. You know, look at all the wealthy people that are ensconced in, you know, the halls of power in the United States. They cozy up with senators and they cozy up with representatives and they make their backroom deals and they retire very, very well off and they just don't have any soul. They're completely corrupt and they're evil.
True cryptocurrencies are the people's, you know, enable the people, the power of the people.
Absolutely.
And the elite don't want that.
Is your broken heart stopping you from being authentically happy? My name is Jeremy West, and for a limited time, I am running a free online class to teach you what most people don't know about how to deal with your feelings, the simple way to deal with your negative thinking, the key to breaking your unhealthy relationship patterns, and so much more. No more feeling like a failure who will never find true love. No more self-medicating and ending up feeling even more miserable. And no more feeling like you'll never be someone who deserves an amazing partner. Sound good? You'll discover a new way to finally feel validated and loved. To stop trying to get your self-worth from the very people who tear it down. And to put you in control of your own happiness. So you never surrender that control to another person again in as little as 8 weeks. Register now for my free online class at beyondyourbreakup.com/free class. That's beyondyourbreakup.com/free class.
Free Talk Live.
This is Free Talk Live. You can bring up whatever you want here. The number is 603-283-6160. That's 603-283-6160. And in the studio here tonight, you've got Ian.
And Chris.
Of course, you can bring up whatever you want. We're talking about a hit piece against cryptocurrency. It's called The Crypto Revolution Has Failed. Or it's called, well, that's what it says in the URL, but the title is The Crypto Revolution is Failing, saying that it was supposed to destroy the financial elite, but it has only made them stronger. Is that really true, though?
It's interesting because it's actually a new group of elite that it's created, I think, if anything. It's not old money. It's actually new money, I think, is the best way to describe it. What do you think? I mean, most of the people who seem to be, you know, have gone in the early days, they were not the investors, Wall Street investors. They came later.
Right. And that's I think, what the point that I wanted to make about that was that it is, yeah, you know, the financial elite is still the financial elite. They're still ensconced. They're still incredibly wealthy. But what crypto has done is it has transferred wealth from their huge piles of, you know, money that they have and put it in the hands of programmers and libertarians and anarchists and voluntarists and people that got into crypto in the early days. Those people are incredibly wealthy now as a result of it. So I think this is one of the things I was telling the film crew earlier, was that what we're seeing happen is libertarians who historically have been very poor, like the ones that I knew, you looked a little confused about that. Like when in the early days of this movement, libertarians had barely two pennies to rub together, Chris. And now those same libertarians are doing very, very well.
I looked at you funny only because I don't necessarily know that represents. I know what you're referencing. I feel like it. I don't feel like that ever represented the libertarians in general. I think the libertarians tended
to be. The ones I knew.
Oh, yeah. Don't get me wrong.
The ones coming here were very
poor. I think there's a
poor.
Lot of poor libertarians that became very wealthy as a result. But I think that wasn't necessarily representative of libertarians overall.
Well, I don't know. I didn't poll libertarians overall. I only know the ones that I knew. And the ones that I knew were coming here.
I think part of the poppers. Reason for that is the libertarians that moved early on tended to be people who were more younger, and I think you'd probably agree with me on that. And
yes, that's true. That
more,
is a factor.
More flexible in their ability to move. Whereas, you know, there's certain people like myself, for example, I certainly was never part of that poor group, but I had a business and it took me a longer to move. And, you know, I was in college, like when the Free State Project first started. And, and so like, it wasn't something, you know, I think that's the case with a lot of people moving now. It's like a lot of, I'm trying to think like who's moved that's been younger. I can't even think of all that many people who have moved, but I can think of a lot of older people who have moved in recent years that definitely did not move in the early days, or at least
they're better off for sure. Like the older you are, the more likely you are to have, you know, accumulated some wealth.
I mean, there's people when they move nowadays that have bought property, you know, like when they move, as opposed to years ago. I think there was only a couple people in Keene who even owned property.
That's right.
Right.
When you moved.
So,
yeah.
Right. Exactly. I was like one of the early.
I think you were like the fourth
house owners. Right.
Yeah.
And it was crazy because there was a lot of people here. But as time moved on in more recent years, we saw more and more people buy property.
Homes. That's true.
Not even for the first time when they moved. But.
Yep.
But the second time, right? So
sure. But the fact is, there were a lot of poor libertarians moving here, and a lot of those guys and gals got into cryptocurrency in the early days, and they're not going to tell you how much, you know, Bitcoin they got, likely. But I suspect we've got more than a handful of crypto millionaires already in New Hampshire. And give it another 5 or 10 years, and you're going to have quite a bit of wealth within the Liberty community. And that's a game changer. And that wealth has come from the old system. It has transferred. And that is something that is a success story. The fact that all of that wealth has transferred away from the bankers, away from the Federal Reserve types, the government goons, and into the pockets of freedom-loving people, of peace-loving people, that's a huge success.
Yeah.
So, let me go on here, though, with his piece from unheard.com. He says, it's the same realization Peter Thiel had in 1999. Again, talking about the realization that you should just obey the government, and then you'll be wealthy, and you'll be, you know, you'll be okay. They'll take care of you. He says, back then, his original vision for PayPal was to create a truly anonymous money transfer system, free from state influence and control. He declared at the time, quote, it will be nearly impossible for corrupt governments to steal wealth from their people through their old means, unquote, before quickly backtracking and rising through the ranks of Silicon Valley. And now PayPal is almost another bank, basically.
I mean,
just about as bad.
I kind of want to know, how did he think that was going to happen? Because I remember even the X.com days, and I, at no point did I ever think that I saw PayPal or X.com as a means of anonymous transactions.
Yeah, it like, was never how would that anonymous.
Have, right, that's what I mean. Like, how would that have even worked? Now, I will say it did. It's kind of interesting because in the early days of PayPal, like, porn was the big thing that was kind of, you know, the underpinning of PayPal that later kicked off anybody who was in the porn industry
of course,
PayPal because of, you know, government effectively. But it, I definitely was never anonymous.
Fast forward to today, and the crypto elite have mimicked Thiel's change of direction. Rather than simply throwing in the towel and admitting the game is up, they've abandoned their cyber-libertarian roots and merged with their enemy, the financial behemoths of Wall Street, the Federal Reserve, and Silicon Valley. Well, I would argue that they never had cyber-libertarian roots. If they're giving up on those things, they didn't have them to give up on in the first place. These are people who have either been co-opted from the get-go, or they've entered this field later on, and they've been interested in appeasing the state.
You know, this is like the big L versus little L, I think, and people confusing what it really means to be libertarian.
Mm-hmm.
People confuse like being a conservative and like libertarian all the time, and that's nothing alike. Right, they're nothing alike, and I don't know. It's one of these things where it's like, yes, libertarians are more about, you know, smaller government and less taxation and things like that.
Mm.
But that's not really the end goal. The end goal is freedom, whereas conservatives tend to be, at least they talk a good game, about small government and, you know, less taxation. But if you look at in practice what they do, it's not that. When was the last time a conservative government actually like
reduce
the budget, right?
Or never.
Right, like this is exactly my point. You know, they'll reduce taxes, but they'll increase, but the budget still goes up. So in the end, you still end up paying more, not less. And if they actually did what they said, you wouldn't be paying more in taxes every year.
Like the libertarians actually reduced the budget in New Hampshire
right.
This year by 3.3%.
And that's, you know, and part of that, and this is why the, you know, the Democrats and the people on the left are freaking out. It's because, you know, with the Republicans in power, they basically didn't have to worry about the government
getting smaller.
That's right. With the libertarians taking
it's
over the Republican
happening.
Party, it's actually getting smaller. And this is the thing I think that really is, you know, it's freaking them out. I mean, the Republicans, true Republicans, don't like what's happening either, but they're not quite freaking out quite as much as I think the Democrats and the left.
Because most of the Republicans do want to see taxes go down. It's just the politicians never do it.
Right.
And
right.
So now it's actually happening.
Yeah.
He says it's easy to see why this would seem appealing. A number of crypto elites are already reaping the rewards of cozying up to the establishment. Jeremy Allaire's Circle, the company behind the huge unaudited cryptocurrency USDC, which is the second most popular stablecoin, second to Tether, has partnered with Silicon Valley payment giants MasterCard and Visa. Meanwhile, Brian Armstrong, the CEO of cryptocurrency exchange Coinbase, revealed in a tweet in May that he'd held meetings in D.C. with high-ranking state officials, including Congresswoman Nancy Pelosi and Federal Reserve Chair Jay Powell. And yeah, we knew those guys were cozying up with the government. We knew that that Coinbase was looking to curry favor with the state all the way back as far as, I think, 2014 or 2013.
Who was it that came out to a hearing in New Hampshire? Was it Praxton?
I know what you're referring to. Poloniex.
Yeah, the exchange. They actually came out to a hearing, and they were like saying things that were like, well, we want regulation because we know you're going to regulate anyway. And it's like, no, these politicians are not like your normal politicians that you're talking to. They're actually not for the regulations. And fortunately, we won on that issue. But it was because the libertarians came out, not because of the industry basically coming out.
Yeah, they want to be controlled. They want to be regulated because they want to write the regulations.
Yeah, that's true.
They want to keep their competition out of the marketplace.
Ah, you spotted something.
Yeah. Hey, there's more coming up here. 603-283-6160. He's got a little bit more to say on why he thinks the crypto revolution has failed. I got to disagree, but we'll continue. And, of course, you're welcome to share your thoughts. 603-283-6160. This is Free Talk Live. Free Talk Live, open phones. If you want to join us here, the number is 603-283-6160. That's 603-283-6160. With you tonight, it's Ian.
And Chris.
First, you can bring up whatever is on your mind. We've been digging into a story here, an opinion piece written over at unheard.com, spelled UNHERD, written by Greg Barker, titled, "The Crypto Revolution is Failing." And he's making the argument here, and we're not done with it yet. I want to keep this thing going because I think it's interesting. I don't agree with it, but I think it's interesting because he's not wrong about what he's saying as far as there are these companies that are cozying up with the government.
Okay.
There are crypto companies that are being regulated, and they want it.
Yeah.
They want to take the government and do, you know, have it do everything to them, right? Because they want to keep people out of the game. This is the same old story about regulators and regulated people and regulated companies that you've seen forever, whether it's the taxi cabs that want to regulate Uber, or whether it's the plumbers that want to keep new plumbers out of business, or the restaurant associations.
Initially, new industries tend to want less regulation, but then as they
get established
themselves, they want more. And the reason is more regulation keeps out the smaller players and competitors.
Right.
So you want to effectively and this is funny. I mean, I don't want to say this is funny, but this is like, this is 101 as far as like business classes are concerned. They actually like teach you that, you know, once you've established if you're part of a new industry, once you establish yourself, you actually want to lobby for more regulation.
Wow, they actually teach this?
This is, yeah, like 101.
Oh,
business classes 101. This is it.
No wonder this happens so much.
Yeah, it's because your company becomes more valuable because now it's, you have no, you can't, there's nobody.
You're in an oligopoly. Right. You're in a limited marketplace.
Yeah. And that's actually the thing that becomes the most valuable. Like when you look at investors, like some of the leading investors and, you know, people with a lot of money, it's like, okay, well, where's that intellectual property? Where is, you know, what's going to stop your competitors, you know, from coming in and eating your lunch? And it's those regulations. It's those intellectual property.
In a free market, it's you staying innovative and you being nimble and you being consumer oriented, right. But when you have regulations, you can just sit pretty and collect a bunch of money because your competitors aren't free to enter the market.
Yep, that's it. Spot on.
Hey, I do want to tell you about Intercoin. It can help businesses and organizations launch their own currency or raise money using their own token. And Intercoin.org has now launched worldwide. So if there's a token you want to launch or an app you want to build, go to intercoin.org, enter your email, and the team will get in touch and learn about your needs. And while you're there, if you want, you can get some of the Intercoin investor tokens for yourself. That's intercoin.org. So let's continue here with the crypto revolution has failed, according to this author over at unheard.com. So he's pointing out some of these crypto companies that are cozying up with the governments. In fact, he even uses that term with the establishment, including the head boss man of Coinbase. Coinbase, one of the largest crypto dealers, if you will, out there. They are a point of access for a lot of people to go and get their first crypto, like Bitcoin or Bitcoin Cash or whatever. It's a huge exchange. It's a tremendously large company. They're basically the big bank of Bitcoin. And they are apparently having meetings with people like Nancy Pelosi and the Federal Reserve chairman. So as he points out here, all of which raises a particular question. Why is the Federal Reserve's head honcho and Bitcoin's supposed archenemy collaborating in undisclosed meetings with the CEO of crypto's main cashier? He's referring to Coinbase. In Bitcoin gospel, that's heresy. The answer lies in what I suspect are the crypto elite's real intentions, namely that they were never really in it for the freedoms Bitcoin could offer, but more for the untold riches it promised. And I think he's absolutely right about this.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I feel like there's two groups of people, right? Like there were the, you know, the business people kind of who started these companies. Mm-hmm. And then there were like the users. And I feel like that wasn't the case with the users, but
he said the crypto elite. He's talking about the executives. He's talking about people like,
yeah, people like Coinbase.
Guy.
Yeah,
that's what he's talking about.
And those are the business people, right? They were always looking at cryptocurrency from a business perspective. It's not about it's like mining for gold. You know, you invest in the tool maker, not necessarily the gold mining. It's the same kind of deal, I feel like.
But he's not wrong with what he says there. These people are not in it for freedom. They're not in it for the reason Satoshi Nakamoto created Bitcoin.
Sure.
They're in it because they want to make more money.
Yeah.
And somebody in the chat room, by the way, in our YouTube says, yeah, if it's not about the money, why did a certain someone hoard close to $5 million in currency? And I think what he's referring to there is the fact that the federal government, when they raided this studio, they found a 100 Bitcoin physical Bitcoin here. There was a physical Bitcoin in a vault, and they took that and they cashed it in for the Bitcoin that was on there, which at the time was worth about $5 million. And so this is a person who doesn't understand, you know, the point behind saving money,
yeah, right.
And having resources at your disposal with which you can do things like activism and run a national radio show and the other projects the church has. So.
Yeah, there's stuff I would love to talk about. I won't, but it's crazy, and it's like they don't even actually understand like where stuff comes from or like how it, you know, how did you or the church, I'm not sure who's that was, but they don't know how it got to you, right? Like
no, but they're jealous.
They're assuming that like this was something that was like, I don't know, like somehow it was something, there was some like some sort of like evil,
yeah,
something evil going on. And it's like, no, that's not how that came about. And it wasn't. And the other thing is like, they assume that it had to do with some sort of criminal activity or something. And it's
not
like,
not at all.
Not at all.
It was donated to us.
Right, right. And it's like, and they don't know, they either don't know that or they don't care, right?
Right. Because to them, anybody with money is a bad person.
Right,
know, in their
right.
mind. Something, anybody that holds on to money is a bad person.
Yeah.
And it's like ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, money is a tool, and cryptocurrency is a tool, and you can use it for bad purposes, and you can use it for good purposes. You can use it for charitable purposes and helping people and fostering peace, which is the mission of the Shire Free Church. And there's nothing wrong with early cryptocurrency adopters becoming wealthy. They were in it early, and by the way, it's probably still early.
Yeah,
you know, even it's only $67,000.
I always laugh when somebody says, "Oh, it was early" or whatever.
Too late now.
It's like acting as if it's too late. Like, what are you talking about?
I don't think so.
Credit cards, 40, 50, 60 years, right?
at least 30 or 40 years.
Decade.
Yeah,
why do you think a decade is going to, like,
it's nothing.
It's going to end after a decade? No, no. It's not. You know,
it's just getting started. It's barely out of the cradle, you know?
Like, oh,
Bitcoin is it hasn't even gotten really easy to use yet. I mean, it's still, it's easier than it was 13 years ago, but it's still kind of complicated.
I mean, it's still way easier than it was, but
it's way easier, but it's still kind of complicated.
It's interesting. I mean, could I, and here's the question, could I show my mother how to use it? And I think the answer is yes.
Would she pay attention?
That's the next question. And I think the next question is so the reason, okay, so here's the thing. I've never like tried to teach my mother how to use cryptocurrency. And the main reason is because where would she use it? And it's not so much that I think she couldn't use it or understand it or any of that. It's that she doesn't live in a place that has cryptocurrency and where it's widely accepted.
Yeah.
So there's no point, right? Yeah. But if she was in Keene, absolutely. I think I could get her on it and using it, and she'd have no problem.
603-283-6160. More about the crypto elite getting close with the government goons and working on regulations and wanting more controls over their businesses. And does that mean the crypto revolution has failed, though? Because that's really the ultimate question here. You can join us on Free Talk Live.
Looking for a great real estate investment? Consider New Hampshire, which is ground zero for the Liberty Movement. Your first call should be to Mark Worden from Porcupine Real Estate. He's more than just a real estate agent. He's your New Hampshire concierge. Where are the best places to live? Do you want farm, city, the burbs, or forest? Do you want a duplex or multifamily building so that renters pay your mortgage? There are homes in all price ranges in New Hampshire, and Mark can help with financing too. Invest in liberty and property. Mark Worden can help.
PorcupineRealEstate.com.
This is Free Talk Live. You can bring up whatever you want here. The number is 603-283-6160. That's 603-283-6160. Has the crypto revolution, so-called, failed simply because there are big corporations out there that are trying to get in close with regulators and be buddy-buddy with government goons? I'm going to say no, it hasn't. But I'll let this guy make some more arguments here. I want to continue with this piece here from unheard.com, UNHERD, titled The Crypto Revolution Has Failed. And we'll keep picking this apart because we love ourselves a good attack piece. And this one's a little different from the normal one. It doesn't trot out the usual arguments. With you here in the studio, though, it's Ian.
And Chris.
And don't forget you can join us online over at freetalklive.com. Don't forget to join Chris on his website, freedomdecrypted.com, which is where you'll find what, Chris?
It's a great tech show for the liberty-minded, I like to say for prickly people. Prickly people being the porcupine and libertarians. We cover a lot of stuff. It's interesting. We cover a lot of stuff that we actually cover on Free Talk Live on Freedom Decrypted, except it tends to be a little bit more, I think, in detail and a lot more of it as far as technical and liberty slanted kind of story, or actually probably more often than not hostile to liberty stories. And then we give it a liberty slant because,
as you would expect, I mean, you guys get to dig in. It's a 3-hour show, I think.
3-hour show once a week. Yep,
and it's
every
all
Saturday.
About tech. So, you know what you're getting into.
Yeah.
We can't go too far into the weeds here on Free Talk Live because we're just a general talk show.
Yep.
So we can talk about crypto, but we can't get into like the programming of it or the engineering of it or anything like that.
Yeah.
So check them out over at freedomdecrypted.com. You do it Saturday afternoons, 5-ish Eastern time.
5 to 8, but you can also download an archived audio version of the show as well as
video. Nice. Check them out. freedomdecrypted.com. So he asks about the Federal Reserve goon top gangster meeting with the head boss man of Coinbase. And he says that he suspects the crypto elite's real intentions are that they were never really in it for the freedoms Bitcoin could offer, but more for the untold riches it promised. And now they've succeeded. So it's all about wealth preservation. And in the age of bailout capitalism, becoming too big to fail is the ultimate protection. That is why getting on the good books of Wall Street and the Federal Reserve seems to be the top priority for crypto billionaires. If a crisis emerges and they threaten to bring down the existing power structure's financial order, guess what? They're first in line for a taxpayer-funded bailout. Right now, it seems inconceivable that the financial elites would bail out the crypto market. But as the bubble gets bigger and becomes tied to Wall Street through its investments, the likelihood increases. I think he's on to an interesting point.
That's interesting, but it's kind of interesting, too, because, like, okay, why should the U.S. government bail out would this be all crypto users? Or
No. He's talking about bailing out the mega corporations.
So just the people who are orchestrating the tools.
Coinbase,
like in order to get cryptocurrencies and things of that nature.
Well, whatever their goal is, they want to cozy up to the government so they can be, you know, they can be on the list.
I mean, it just sounds absolutely insane to have an entity like, you know, especially a financial entity like that. Bailed out in the first place, especially one that's not based around, you know, dirty fiat, right? Like it's, I understand, like with dirty fiat, it kind of makes sense, I guess, but like with cryptocurrency, it's literally, that's what it's designed to do, right? Like it's designed to enable you, you should already be taking into account the swings, right? The ups and the downs, right? Mm-hmm. Because that's exact, I mean, Your role is effectively to do what the financial regulators do for the dollar, right? So if you're not doing it yourself, then you don't understand cryptocurrencies.
Okay, but he's saying that he doesn't think they would at this point. But if these people get themselves integrated with the state as much as they want to be, right? They want to have meetings with them. They want to be, you know, currying favor. They want to scratch backs. They want to log roll. They want to do all these things. They want to get politicians on their side. And in the long run, I don't think he's wrong that they would want a bailout if they could get a piece of it, right? Like they,
yeah,
you know, that's what they would want. And he's saying, look, if you get connected with Wall Street, interconnected to where all these mutual funds now, yep, have a, didn't they just approve an ETF? What is that, exchange traded fund or something?
Yeah.
I don't really know what that means, but the Bitcoin people have been all hubbub about this for years. Every time a Bitcoin or an ETF has Bitcoin, this is some sort of investment or whatever. Every time they do this, yep, there's all these news media stories in the Bitcoin world about, ooh, this ETF might get approval. And it didn't get approval, and it didn't get approval. And yep, now finally one got approved this week.
Yeah. I mean, I think it basically, as I understand it, makes it easier for traditional traders to get their hands on Bitcoin.
That's the point that he's making here, is if enough of these traditional traders start to put money into Bitcoin, then maybe some of these companies will become too big to fail and get in on the bailouts the next time there's a round of bailouts during a financial calamity. I don't know. It's an interesting theory.
Yeah.
He says, take Tether, for example. On top of its $63 billion market cap, half of its reserves are now backed by real-world debt securities issued by Wall Street companies. Given it is a modern wildcat bank, one that issues its own currency and has failed to provide any proof its assets even exist, it's unlikely that we will ever know how much debt Tether owns. But if it's revealed that Tether's value is, in fact, a swindle, Wall Street could eventually face losses amounting to more than a slight haircut. In which case, don't be surprised when the Federal Reserve comes to its rescue. It's easy to forget that Wall Street can't be distinguished from the Federal Reserve. The financial elites know that if something goes wrong, Jerome Powell, the chair of the Federal Reserve, will be there to step in and bail them out at whatever cost. Remember, last year during COVID, during the initial lockdowns, crackdowns, and all that stuff, the Federal Reserve started buying up stocks.
That's right. Right?
Buying up these financial instruments to pump the markets, to keep them from crashing, essentially artificially inflate them. So they are willing to play these games with your money and enrich these Wall Street people.
Yeah. I've always been wary of Tether, but I understand it, you know, as a useful potential tool. But at the same time, it's not a cryptocurrency.
And it is a crypto token.
Right, right.
It's a token that exists on Ethereum blockchain.
I don't know. I'm just like, Not a fan.
Oh, I'm not a fan either.
Yeah.
But is he wrong that is a possibility?
Certainly. I mean, I don't think it's...
It is a possibility,
I think it's almost a guarantee. I mean, like, I think any business would love for the, you know, government, just any non-libertarian business is going to wish the government would bail them out. You know, mm-hmm, if I make a poor decision, unfortunately, you know, the reality is most small businesses, they're not going to get bailed out, right?
Like, no.
If I screw up and I make a mistake in my business, the government is not going to bail me out, right? But if you're a big business and you're too big
to fail,
right, industry or whatever, you know, then all of a sudden, you know, that no longer applies, and yeah, the government does bail them out. And I think that's it's a possibility. It does seem like it's hard for me to imagine.
It seems unlikely, but it's possible.
I could see it happening with something maybe like Tether. And partially it's because, look, you know, it's not being audited, right? It's not being properly audited. And we already know, and I think, and there was actually a fine that was issued, but it's interesting about Tether because they actually have not, they've said that they were one-to-one with the dollar, but that they actually said that early on. And then at some point, that doesn't mean that's always going to be that way, right? Mm-hmm. They just said this is how it is, as I understand it. So I never, you know, the more I read into it, it doesn't seem like they were ever really dishonest. They just didn't allow audits. Mm. And then they moved to having like a mixed system where it was like they had some gold and they had some other assets, but they didn't tell people that. And so anyway.
Yeah.
It was.
I think a lot of the critiques of Tether are completely deserved. You know, like they haven't been forthcoming.
I think the criticisms are deserved, yeah. But I don't necessarily think that they have lied. And I feel like the
I don't know. I haven't looked close enough at the claims. So I
haven't looked close enough either. I'm going to be honest, but that's how it appears to me.
If I were in crypto, you know, as far as I can't legally use it right now by the stupid bail conditions.
Well, here's the question: are stablecoins crypto? Because I wouldn't think that's crypto.
Well, that's another interesting argument, right? Like, I'm not willing to try and find out, but I would, if it were me, I would have no holdings in Tether. I would not hold on to it because there's a high propensity.
But why would you anyway, right?
For it to fail,
it's just the means of doing crypto.
Yeah, the only reason you want to have something like that is temporarily.
Yeah,
is if you need to sell Bitcoin to, like, if you think Bitcoin's price is crashing, you can sell, get some Tether, and then wait for the Bitcoin price to crash, and then buy it back with the Tether at a lower price. There's more coming up here in moments. This is Free Talk Live. It is Free Talk Live. You can join us here and bring up whatever is on your mind. The number is 603-283-6160. That's 603-283-6160. We're talking about those mega corporate entities like Coinbase and Tether that are getting as cozy as they can with federal regulators and other federal goon squads to, you know, in the hopes that their businesses will be protected. They don't want to have upstarts and innovators and competitors coming into their business. They want to be the ones to write the regulations that prevent those other innovators from coming in and changing the industry, changing the business. Just like the taxi cab business wants to stop Uber and Lyft from, you know, competing with them. Just like the pharmaceutical manufacturers want to prevent small companies from cooking up, you know, new drugs and things like that and bringing them to market without having to pass a multi-billion-dollar FDA approval process or whatever. So this is the long, same old story. As you pointed out, Chris, they actually apparently teach this in government colleges, that they say, hey, once you get successful in a business, you got to regulate. You got to get the government to create laws to keep people out from competing with you. And so it's the same old story, just told again in the crypto sphere.
You know, it's actually interesting. So I do believe that both private and government colleges, I had business classes where they taught that.
It's so sick.
It wasn't even just like government school or private schools. They both taught that.
Right. Instead of actually spending money on research and development and innovation, no, spend money lobbying.
Yep.
So you can just prevent competition. It's sick. So I don't think the author here at unheard.com, it's unherd.com, I don't think he's wrong in what he's saying, in that these companies definitely are trying to be buddy-buddy with the federal government, and they definitely want government to regulate the industry. However, I don't agree with his conclusion so far that that means the crypto revolution has failed. I think in spite of these corporations and companies, there are so many different cool innovations in the crypto world, like Monero and other privacy coins. Pirate Coin, for instance, are. So there's like not just privacy coins, but also decentralized finance. No one saw that one coming. And decentralized finance has really taken off in the last couple of years to essentially really bring some serious innovation to the world of like issuing loans, for instance. Because now, if you've got crypto, now you don't get a crypto loan without already having crypto. But if you've got crypto, if you've got like Bitcoin, you can deposit that Bitcoin into one of these crypto loan platforms. And some of them are actually now decentralized, from what I understand. I've not tried this personally, but I've heard that they exist, to where you're just depositing into a smart contract. You deposit the Bitcoin or whatever, and then in return, you get U.S. dollar stable coins. Essentially, you're getting a loan, so you're not converting your Bitcoin to dollars. You're loaning the Bitcoin and getting dollars on the collateral, essentially, in that case. And so that you don't have to ask for anyone's permission to do that. You don't have to apply at a bank and sit down and, you know, show ID or anything like that. It's an ID-less, permissionless loan. And that's one of the things that DeFi or decentralized finance is doing right now. And I don't even know half of it. Like, I don't have time to research all of the innovations in the world of decentralized finance. You've got decentralized finance. You've got dark finance. You've got all these exciting things that are happening out there. Like, the least exciting part of crypto is Coinbase and Tether and all these big mega corporations and what they're doing.
It really is.
They're not interesting at all. But
no, they're really quite boring. Yeah. It's there's so much more interesting stuff going on in the cryptocurrency and crypto space just in general. In the blockchain and all that.
But big gets attention, right? Yeah, like, as far as the media, yeah. As far as media coverage is concerned, as far as government is concerned, that those things get attention.
It seems like they think that that's all that exists. Like, a certain people think that's all that exists, and it's not.
Yeah. So, like I said, I don't disagree with the points he's making, but the overall conclusion, I do disagree. But let's finish this up here. He says, so if the next crypto crash does threaten to bring down their system, he says these wildcat banks like Tether become too big to fail, or our current financial power structure. He says our current financial power structures will do everything they can to ensure the status quo is maintained. Two classes of elites will become one, with the less desirable parts of the crypto world and likely the taxpayer's purse becoming collateral damage. What happens next is anyone's guess, but with the likes of Goldman Sachs combining forces with such unsavory characters in the crypto elite, it's not impossible to imagine them wreaking havoc around the globe, charging clients obscene crypto fees and betting against their own Bitcoin products to make even more money. The rest of us, meanwhile, will watch on from afar, knowing we're powerless to stop or escape yet another era of financial repression. Talk about negative. I mean, I totally disagree. Look, I'm not happy to see any crypto people pushing for regulation. I'm not happy to see El Salvador mandating Bitcoin acceptance. There are definitely some things that I find very distasteful that certain people within the crypto sphere are doing. It sickens me when I see Bitcoin maximalists cheering on El Salvador, like, yay, it's Bitcoin's legal tender. Yeah, they're mandating it. Okay, I know that the president says they're not going to do it, but the law itself says that you have to accept Bitcoin. And if they want to enforce that law on some people, they will. And that is the antithesis of what Satoshi Nakamoto wanted. So I find some of these things to be very disturbing. But ultimately, I can't do anything about it.
Yeah, I honestly, like, I am so conflicted about that. It's like, I'm on the one hand, I like what's going on in one sense, but on the other hand, the way they went about it was terrible.
You mean El Salvador?
Yeah, El Salvador. And
well, it's a government. Of course it's going to be terrible. Well. Of course.
Right, right.
It's like, going to be a boondoggle.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of ugly to the El Salvador situation, and the sad part is, the worst part about it, isn't the fact that the government would mandate it, because that's to be expected from government. They don't know how to not use force. But the worst part is, it makes Bitcoin look bad, PR of it.
It does.
And there's a lot of people out there who might otherwise have been accepting of Bitcoin if it weren't mandated. And now they're against it simply because it's mandated.
And, you know, it's so weird, too, because, like, on the one hand, it's like, it's almost like the government finally did something good, but, like, they did it in this evil way, you know? It's like it probably will result in, you know, significant improvements, you know, economic to the people of El Salvador.
It probably will.
But at the same time, it's like, no, that's not the way you were supposed to do it.
Yeah. And they're getting pushback, you know? The crew that was here, the film crew, they did a piece on El Salvador. I haven't watched it yet, but I did watch the one they did on Bitcoin City in Netherlands, and it was very good. So I expect it'll be good coverage. And I said, did you guys talk to the opposition? They said, yeah, we went to one of the protests. And
nice.
They talked to the people that are against the mandate. And they are not against Bitcoin. They're against the mandate.
Right.
And so they're absolutely right in their opposition to that, and I would be on their side.
Yeah, me too.
If I were down there, which would be an awkward position to be in as somebody who's like, you know, I'll wear a Bitcoin t-shirt or whatever, but yet I would be against the government mandating it.
I feel like I'd be in El Salvador being like, here's teaching him about goldbacks. While being like, okay, it's good to get into Bitcoin, but don't do it because of the government. Use goldbacks, you know, to oppose what the government's doing, and then get in later, you know, after because it's like you should stand up to bullies, right? And that's kind of what you're doing by using the goldbacks instead.
Yeah, so I think this is gonna keep going in this direction. The big corporations are gonna try to get tied in with Wall Street. They're gonna keep, you know, trying to work with the government because they want to be part of that system. And that is not what cryptocurrency was supposed to do. However, there's so much that cryptocurrency is doing that has nothing to do with that. There are still so many different actors within the crypto marketplace and the crypto sphere that are not begging for permission. They're not waiting for government to say go. They're not asking regulators to step in. They're not talking about creating new rules for people to follow. There are people out there innovating every single day. And that's one of the most exciting things about cryptocurrency is that you don't have to ask permission. There is no gatekeeper.
Yeah. It's interesting because it really is just a tool. And how you use it, it determines whether or not it's for good or evil, right? Like, it's kind of like a gun, you know? I mean, yes, guns can be used for bad, but they can also be used for defense.
For the most part, they're used for defense.
Right.
Except when the governments use them.
Well, exactly the point that I'm making, right? Like, just because it exists doesn't necessarily mean that it's good or bad. It's neutral. It's just a tool. And it potentially, if used in, you know, if we all use it, it has a lot of good that can come from it. If, you know, if only governments use it, then, you know, maybe it'll just be bad that results. But I think it's going to end up being more good than bad. I mean, I have no doubts about that really. But
you mean crypto?
Yeah.
I mean, it already is.
I mean, it's already kind of evening the playing field between, you know, the people who have the money and the people who at least didn't used to have the money. And it's amazing what ends up resulting is, you know, just a general improvement in all of our standards of living.
Yeah, people give the government too much credit. I think they think the government can control crypto, and it can't. Just tries to act like it can. It's, you know, it put the, you know, the question on the IRS form. It puts the regulations over the corporations. And hopefully we're in the ending days of governments, and then we won't have to deal with them at some point. More coming up here. Hour number three is on the way. You can take control of the airwaves. Free Talk Live's video archives have been on Library for years. Library is an uncensorable, decentralized, blockchain-based media sharing protocol, and we're big fans of it here on Free Talk Live. In 2020, Library launched Odyssey, a video sharing website to compete with YouTube, and it's really taking off, now with over 1 million channels, many of whom are disaffected YouTube creators. During YouTube's crackdown for not towing the government line on COVID, the Free Talk Live YouTube channel started receiving strikes and could be completely taken down at any moment. Thankfully, Odyssey started offering live streaming, so we're now streaming live every night and posting our video archives permanently to Odyssey. You can watch live or anytime on our Odyssey channel by visiting video.freetalklive.com. If you want to go all in, download the desktop app at lbry.com, and then every video archive you watch, you'll help seed and keep it online forever. At minimum, we ask you visit video.freetalklive.com and follow us on Odyssey today. Video.freetalklive.com.
Free Talk Live.
It's Free Talk Live. You can bring up whatever you want. We kick off the third hour of the program. Phones are open here if you want to join us. Number 603-283-6160. That's 603-283-6160. In the studio with you, it's Ian.
And Chris.
Chris, it's not all about crypto here tonight. We did get in quite a bit of detail on the question of did the crypto revolution fail. You're certainly still welcome to call in about it if you want to. But you've got another story that's tech-related, which, of course, you host a tech show called Freedom Decrypted over at freedomdecrypted.com. But this one is more about invasion of privacy.
Yeah, this one I find to be super creepy, and I don't understand, you know, government's obsession with your body.
They want total control over you from birth to death, including from top to bottom on your body parts.
Yeah, I mean, there is... It's
what's
disgusting.
Not to understand? It's total control. It's, they want to own you.
I thought it was bad in the 90s when, you know, not even the 90s. It was probably like early 2000s when schools started like making you, like they were start recording like what you bought for lunch in cafeterias and things like that.
Really?
Yeah. This was probably after you graduated.
I grew up in the 80s and the 90s. So I graduated in the late 90s.
Yeah.
I remember in the cafeteria, they gave you a number, so you had to like punch your number in order to make a purchase.
Really?
But they weren't tracking like what you bought. They didn't have any really meaningful way of
that. Is
doing
so
that,
creepy. I remember just, you know, in elementary school, you just give them your money like you normally, like any adult would at any place, you know, give them a.
This wasn't elementary school. This would have been like high school. So it would have been the late 90s.
Sure. For the number. So they were, but they had some sort of system, which is creepy to me.
Yeah. All the way back then. Yep.
First time I ever encountered it was high school. And even I think in the beginning years, we had IDs, but we didn't like have to scan our ID to buy lunch. And it was creepy because it's like, why do you need to scan my ID? I'm not paying you for my lunch with my ID. I'm giving you cash. Why do you need to record what I am buying?
You know what? They might have been recording it now that I'm thinking about it. I guess I just never really thought about it too hard.
Yeah, and it's creepy because they don't need to know. Like, okay, so here's, I think, the theory of the excuse that they were giving effectively. Well, we need to make sure that you're not going to die. Well, I'm not allergic to anything. Why do you need to know? And they don't.
Well, one thing's for sure, they didn't care that much about our health because they would sell you French fries every single day if you wanted that.
And that's the thing. And that's the other thing. And it's like, and then the next question is, well, okay, so you're not recording what every kid brings into school to eat for lunch if they don't buy it. So again, remind me why I have to scan my ID in order to buy lunch.
Oh, well, see, this is all about training you for the real world, so you can be
used
to...
But the real world doesn't require me to scan my driver's license to buy lunch.
Well, now it does. If you're in cities like New York City or Los Angeles, to get into a restaurant, you now have to show, it's not scanning, but you have to show your ID to an employee in order to go eat somewhere in New York City, San Francisco, Los Angeles, and New Orleans, and now King County, Washington, which includes Seattle.
Oh my God. I got out of New Jersey
due to COVID
just in time.
They passed these vaccination mandates, but the vaccine passport doesn't have your photo on it, so they also want you to show ID. That's the thing they don't tell you in the news media.
Are you serious?
Yeah, this is a double ID requirement. That's what In-N-Out, we just reported on In-N-Out Burger. Have you heard of them on the West Coast?
I've been to In-N-Out Burger a couple times.
In-N-Out Burger got closed down in San Francisco this week because they were refusing to ID their customers and mandate vaccine passports.
What about people who don't have ID?
Sorry, you don't get to eat anymore.
If I'm a little old lady.
Nope.
No ID because, you know, there's lots of little old people who have a hard time getting out and about and going to doctor's appointments.
I've seen video.
They don't have ID. A lot of people don't have ID.
I have seen video.
What about the 5-year-old that doesn't have ID?
Sorry, you can't eat. You'll have to sit in the car. Look, I saw a video. Speaking of little old ladies at fast food, there was a video from Toronto, which is just as bad, if not worse, than a lot of the American cities. Canada's insane right now with this stuff. Toronto, McDonald's, they had just required the vaccine passport.
Mm-hmm.
This lady, she might have had ID, but she didn't have the vaccine passport. She left it at home. So she was vaccinated, and she was like trying to explain to the manager at the McDonald's, look, I'm vaccinated. I've got my ID. I can show it to you. I just want to order, you know, some food. And the manager's like, I'm sorry, ma'am. You can't be in here. You got to go. And like kicked her out into whatever the weather was outside at the time, and this lady was probably 75 years old.
It's so disgusting.
Yeah. So In-N-Out Burger did the right thing, and they refused to enforce San Francisco's mandate, and San Francisco shut their restaurant down as a result of it.
You know,
In-N-Out Burger said, we don't want to segregate our customers.
People think I'm crazy for objecting to things like driver's licenses, right? Just their existence and license plates.
That paved the way.
This is where it leads. Yeah. Yeah. You know, people, you know, in the 90s, I remember my parents, you know, they had driver's licenses, but it didn't have a photo on it. You know?
That's true. That's right.
It's and now everybody has a photo on their driver. Like, mm-hmm. like it just gets worse. It's worse and worse and worse every
baby
single
steps.
Year. Baby
mm-hmm.
steps. And eventually
then they take a big step like they did last year.
Yeah. You won't even be able to go walk out of your house without an ID because if you don't have an ID, you can't live. You can't eat. You can't work. You can't.
That's how it is in Australia. You can't leave your house unless you're vaccinated.
Well, this story.
Actually checked. There was video of Australian police walking up to a guy like he was walking through a park or whatever.
Yeah.
He had his mask, had a mask off because he's drinking from a cup of coffee.
Mm-hmm.
And they stop him and demand he hand his coffee cup over to them so he can prove that there's actually liquid in the coffee cup to prove he's not faking it so he doesn't have to have his mask on while being out and about.
And did they check? Was there coffee in the
cup? They sure did.
And there was coffee in the coffee
cup. I believe there was.
Wow.
They handed it back to him.
Oh my gosh.
Instead of arresting him.
Wow. I'm sorry.
That's how insane this is all getting. So anyway, go on with what's happening at government schools now. How much worse is it getting now?
And it's funny. It's like we're constantly talking about New Hampshire and how bad New Hampshire is, even though it's like one of the best places. And I'm just like, I'm always just blown away about how other places can be getting even worse. Give us your biometric data to get your
Where's
lunch.
The source? Sorry. What?
So this is from the Register?
Register, okay.
Yeah. Give us your biometric data to get your lunch in 5 seconds, UK schools tell children.
Mm.
Facial recognition for meal payment system works for kids, supplier says. So
even with a mask on?
I don't know. Let's read it and see.
All right.
Facial recognition technology is being employed in more UK schools to allow pupils to pay for their meals, according to reports today, as if you actually even need to ID them in the first place.
It's going
to
be a mandate if it's not a mandate yet.
I mean, seriously, like there's other ways that you could do this. You could do this by like lunch tickets or like there's other ways you could make this go really fast through the like, you know, making kids go through the line without like using biometric data.
I think they did
payments.
I think they were doing thumbprints after I left school. I think like within a decade after I left, they already
moved
thumbprints.
I would not give them my. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't even give them my thumbprints for like I remember like I forget where or when or where this was when I was young, but I remember like refusing to like partake in like fingerprint like finger not finger painting, but like you get your fingers like wet with paint on them and then like you put them against like a wall or a paper or something and then they get like I don't know if they got hung up. I don't even know what it was for or why, but I always thought that was creepy because somebody's getting my fingerprints like and this was when I was probably like in elementary school or something like that. I'm like, what is wrong with people that they so easily and willy-nilly hand over their data, especially when they're teaching you like about like how the Nazis are like, you know, using these sorts of systems to like round people up, and yet that people just go and they hand over their biometric data.
Sometimes they'll actually go to the police department. The police department will have days where they'll invite parents to bring their kids into the police department and have them fingerprinted.
What on earth are they thinking?
Oh, like, they tell them it's to keep them safe if they get kidnapped or something like that.
Oh my God. Do you know how rare kidnapping is? It's like
pretty rare.
And when it does happen, it's usually a family member, so it's not even like they don't get caught right away.
If we're not including arresting, which is also kidnapping whenever they arrest
you. Yeah, right. That's exactly what I was talking
about. More coming up. It's Free Talk Live. Free Talk Live, open phones. If you want to join us, the number is 603-283-6160. We're talking about the next step in government domination over your body, which is mandatory. Well, I don't know if it's mandatory yet, but it's coming. Face scanning technology, biometric identifiers, just to get school lunch. So if you're still sending your kids to government school, which you shouldn't be if you actually, you know, care about freedom and care about your kids, I think you need to figure out a way to stop. But if you're still sending them to these government day prisons, well, they've got new tech they're going to be shoving down their throats. Chris is going to tell us about it.
In North Ayrshire Council, a Scottish...
This is the UK, yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, just to be clear, this is not the United States. However, I'll be shocked if they haven't deployed it as some sort of test, at a minimum, sort of some sort of test system at some school in the United States as well here. Basically the same system. Or something similar. A Scottish authority encompassing the Isle of Arran, 9 schools are set to begin processing meal payments for school lunches using facial scanning technology. The authority and the company implementing the technology, CRB Cunningham's, claim the system will help reduce queues and is less likely to spread COVID-19 than card payments and fingerprint scanners. I am amazed that they have fingerprint scanners.
I'm not.
In school.
That's old. That's old tech.
It is old tech, but they're using it in schools.
Yeah.
Like, I can kind of see maybe like a high tech sort of facility where, you know, you've got super secret something to protect or whatever, or nuclear facilities or something, right? But schools?
Yeah, no, they definitely want to get people used to giving up biometric information in order to get things, in order to get privileges, in order to get benefits or food in this particular case.
Sick. This is sick. Speaking to the publication, David Swanstone...
And they're using COVID as their excuse, yeah, as you pointed out, yeah, I think, off the air.
The MD of supplier CRB Cunningham's said the cameras verify the child's identity against encrypted fingerprint templates.
Oh, it's safe and secure.
Oh, yeah. Sure. That's what they say. You know, this kind of reminds me of how I... So New Hampshire allows you to opt out, I believe, of the... retaining of the photo on file
when you do a driver's license.
Yeah, when you get your driver's license,
which is interesting. I don't know if I believe them, but
well,
that's what they say.
It's a lie.
Yeah.
And I can confirm this, and I'll tell you how I know. But I opted out. I did all the things I was required to. I lost my driver's license somehow. I thought it was stolen. And I went in and I got a renewal. They printed it out. Now, this was like years later, okay?
Yeah, so they should have deleted the photo. If
they shouldn't have been a photo on file.
Right.
And they just printed it right out.
Wait a minute. The government lied to you. Oh, my gosh.
Wouldn't be the first time. Yeah. Yeah. He added, in a secondary school, you have around about a 25-minute period to serve potentially 1,000 pupils. You know what's amazing is that sounds about what I recall school lunch being when I was a...
25 minutes?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
No.
How long
Not
did
when
you
I was in school.
Long? When did you get...
When I was in high school... Now, this is secondary school in the UK. Is that not... What is that? Is that like middle school or
middle
something?
Middle school, maybe-ish?
When I was in school later on, it was... You got one period for lunch... And that period was as long as the rest of the periods in the day, which was about 50 minutes.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting. So I remember they're not, especially my elementary school, there not being a lot of time for lunch.
Interesting.
And the way they did it in elementary school was we didn't really have like periods like that, but there were kind of like for like lunch and like, I mean, there was sort of, it's just like we weren't aware of it, I guess. And what they did was they would basically break up what would be recess and lunch. So you'd have like, I don't know, 30 minutes to play and 25 minutes for lunch, something like that, right?
You'd go to recess before lunch?
It was after.
Okay.
It was after. But anyway, so but that's how they did it. But they had to do it sort of like they had to kind of do it that way because there were so many students they had to feed through, you know, run through the lunchroom, and you know, they kind of were at max capacity. So there wasn't that much time for lunch. But the thing is, we were still using cash and there was no tracking system.
Right.
So you cannot give me this excuse that like you can't do it. And there are other ways to solve these problems. You can sell lunch tickets. You can do there's just other ways to solve these problems.
But that doesn't give them control.
Violate a child's, you know, privacy and bodily autonomy.
You're never going to get those solutions from these government facilities. They want more control. They want more data. And they want excuses to collect it. And so now they have it. Oh, well, sorry, COVID happened, so we can't just use fingerprint scanners anymore. Now we have to have a face scan. You don't want your kids to touch the same thing other kids touch, do you?
The average transaction time was cut to 5 seconds per pupil. I'm pretty sure lunch tickets, which they existed in the 80s and 90s when I was in school, before they, you know, used more digital means of forms of transacting, they literally were less than, way less than 5 seconds. I mean, it was probably like a fraction of a second to hand over your lunch ticket.
Yeah,
to
but
the
I'll play devil's advocate on this for you. I mean, if you got a lunch ticket, the kids are going to forget it. They're going to leave the ticket at home, and then you got problems. Then they're standing in line. They don't have the ticket,
and
that holds up the line.
I remember doing this in first grade. It wasn't a problem.
And you know people are going to forget the lunch tickets.
There were, well actually, it's
interesting.
They're
going to lose them.
So this is interesting. So in my elementary school, the way it worked was you paid for the lunch tickets and your name was there. And so the lunch lady would just pull out your...
Oh, so it's on a file.
It was on the file. So you didn't even have to, you didn't even have to carry your like lunch tickets. So like this whole idea that it, like you would somehow, like that there's not other ways to solve these problems, like that are much faster is nonsense.
They're yeah, but then they won't be able to give their technology company buddies a big contract.
Well, this is exactly it. This is a, it's effectively a scam. This is a way to excuse the schools or the governments from basically giving their buddies money, you know, for technology that's not needed.
I bet this is a multi-million dollar contract.
Oh, yeah. The system is already, but of course, they probably won't tell us how much they paid for this system. And they'll probably tell us, oh, it's free. Well, yeah, this year, but next year, you're dependent on it, and thereafter. And so then every other year, it'll be millions of dollars. The system has already been piloted in 2020 at one community school in England. The council said that 97% of parents, 97%, this just amazes me. And I think it goes into, yes, it goes into a little bit as to why you have a 97% in theoretically in support. Or no, consent. Consent is the word they use. And it, and this is the thing I always amazed, I was amazed at in my high school too when it came to computers. It's like, okay, you're required to use the computer for schoolwork, but in order to use the computer for schoolwork, you have to agree to these terms. I'm like, wait a minute. Okay, so if I don't agree to these terms, I can't do my schoolwork. Which, like, does that make any sense to you? How do you force me into agreeing to something that I don't agree to? And then, like, what, are you going to fail me if I don't agree to this? And that back in those days, it was for, like, using, I don't know if it was the internet specifically or the computer, but whatever it was like, okay, but you're requiring me to do this. So how can you require me to do this? And then say I have to sign it? No, I don't. So a signature is something I voluntarily, like, I'm consenting to, and I don't. Anyway. Yeah, so 97% gave consent, and apparently parents were being kind of like misled or not told about like what it was they were consenting to. So, but yet they consented anyway somehow.
603-283-6160. I don't know if homeschool is an option in the UK, but if it is,
I think it's outlawed.
Jeez. Those poor parents. Yeah. More coming up here in moments. You can share your thoughts. Free Talk Live.
When a lunar observatory detects a radio broadcast originating from Proxima Centauri, the nations of Earth discover their first contact with an alien race may also be their last. With the Proximans facing an extinction-level disaster, Earth must choose between sending a ship on a multi-year journey or allowing nature to take its course. Saving Proxima, a hard science fiction thriller by Travis S. Taylor and Les Johnson. From BaneBooks.com.
This is Free Talk Live. You can join us here. The number is 603-283-6160. That's 603-283-6160. Here in the studio tonight, it's Ian
and Chris.
I want to say thanks to Nicole Edge, who is a Free Talk Live Amps. She's over on the new AMPS program over at amps.freetalklive.com. We launched a Patreon to replace our old AMP system because I had to take the old website down. It just it was breaking, and it just wasn't worth repairing, and it was better to just replace it with something new. So go check out our Patreon over at amps.freetalklive.com and get signed up and help support Free Talk Live. Like Nicole, she's a gold amplifier, which means she contributes $10 a month to this radio program to help us spread the ideas of freedom on more radio stations. We've got 186 stations now. Just added a couple new stations in Montana that are airing our show on Sunday nights.
What's the number up to?
It's 186.
186, okay.
Yep. And so head over to amps.freetalklive.com and join the AMPS program like Nicole did. So really appreciate the support. It makes a big difference for us. So Ian and Chris in the studio here tonight. Chris, you were just telling us about a not unexpected story, really, coming out of government school in a UK town or something like that.
I think
that.
It was Scotland, but yeah. I believe that's part of the UK.
It is, still.
Yeah, still.
I think some of them want to secede, if I recall correctly, but that didn't pass years
yeah,
ago.
Yeah, they have a weird thing where I think Scotland is part of the EU still, maybe, or at least they have trade with the EU, but I think England
doesn't. Yeah, I don't know how that
something.
Shook out with the whole Brexit thing.
I think...
But they're talking about mandating or opting in 97% apparently of the students
consenting.
Yeah,
they weren't told what it was, and yeah, it's a bizarre story.
To a facial recognition system in order to acquire their lunch. And I don't know if do we cover the whole story pretty much. Is there more that you wanted to share?
Yeah, I mean that's a good question. So I think we kind of talked about most of these concerns. So privacy campaigners voiced concerns that moving the technology into schools merely for payment was needlessly normalizing facial recognition. No child should have to go through border-style identity checks just to get a school meal. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
I
would say no one should have to go through these checks anywhere they are. I don't think there should be at the border. I don't think there should even be a border. You know, I think people should just be able to go and travel like they can through most of Europe, you know?
It's crazy, too, because, like, they're fining companies over this kind of stuff, facial recognition in Europe.
Really?
So it's really bizarre. Now,
they're fining companies for implementing it?
Yeah, any kind of like facial recognition kind of technology.
So wait, the government says it's okay for them to do, but not for companies to do?
Yeah, this is kind of like, it's the craziest thing. Yeah, it's absolutely
Europe.
Insane. Now, I will say this is the UK and they're not sort of part of the EU anymore.
No, they left
for
Brexit.
Maybe Scotland.
Brexit happened.
I'm not entirely sure. So this may not be as laughable as we're making it out to be, but it's still pretty funny hear about, because there certainly is a lot of regulation in the UK too, right? Like even if you take it out of the EU, it's still overly regulated. It's still a lot of socialism. It's all the things that we are constantly I want to say kind of laughing at, but also like condemning. Like, I mean, this is just disgusting. Like this constant nonstop tracking that's going on all over the place.
Right. And plus you can combine this with all the other obedience initiatives that they're forcing on kids, like masking, because you know they're mandating masking over in the UK. They're worse there probably on some of this stuff than some of the US states. And I've got a related story to that because
I mean, honestly, the masking thing, like this seems like the masking seems like nothing compared to this. Like when you start taking blood from me or you start fingerprinting me or you start using facial recognition, like that seems to blow everything out of the water. That's 1984 material right there. Mm-hmm. The masking thing. I don't even know. Maybe that goes beyond. I don't know if that goes beyond.
I think they're both very bad.
They're both bad.
And I think masking is particularly bad because it is dehumanization of the young people in a time where it's so important to be able to see people's expressions. It's always important to see people's expressions, and more so when you're young.
I'm mixed on that one, mostly because I don't know if the masking thing is beyond 1984, because I have never envisioned anything beyond 1984, right? Like that wasn't even a thing, I don't think, in like 1984.
Yeah, they didn't have that in 1984.
Right? So, like, you know what this reminds me of actually even more so, which is, I don't know. I'm trying to
oppressive
think.
Muslim Middle Eastern countries?
No. Well, yeah. But no, it's even worse than that. So there is, I can't think off the top of my head what show it was. I don't know if it was, it might have been like, it wasn't Doctor Who. But anyway, there is a show where there's basically these, it's weird. They basically kidnap minorities and they basically drug them. And they have, and the crazy thing is we have like probably everything we need to do this today, like technologically speaking. But what they do is they drugged in the TV show, what they do is they take them into like a prison, like a kind of a traditional prison, these minorities. Mm-hmm. And
or basically anybody the government doesn't like, but especially minorities. And they would basically drug them, and then they would like surgically operate on them. And it, instead of getting like fed through like your mouth, they sealed over the mouth, kind of like the masks actually that kids are wearing. But they were sewed, it was sewn into the skin, and then they were painted like a silver color.
This is fiction?
It's fiction.
Okay.
But it's kind of like we have drugs to kind of like keep people under control today. Mm-hmm. So it's that part kind of we already have. The next stage is, and they do it like in prisons and in jail, like they often drug the inmates, right? And
yep.
So
and in schools,
right? And in schools too, right? And so the masks are kind of like that, almost like combine the two. And the point of the drugging is to like get you to do what you otherwise wouldn't agree to.
Yeah, and make you docile.
Right, and make you mm-hmm. docile. It's exactly what it was. And then basically the next step is to rent out these docile creatures to like do things like pick up garbage. And I mean that's what it was, the storyline mm-hmm. in this TV show. But yeah, it very much reminds me of that, you know?
It's really creepy to me, and I can't even imagine how much damage this is doing to these kids. I mean, to take away the humanity of being able to see facial expressions. I mean, that is such a basic level of communication between people. Like, we don't have to talk to know, to some extent, how each other is feeling, to know whether somebody is feeling good or upset or whatever. You get these cues from people and the way that they look at you, the way that they have expressions on their face. And that's been wiped out for these kids. But that's not far enough for some of these schools. According to Summit.News, teachers at a Colorado Springs middle school are now forcing children to tape the masks to their face in what is being described as an act of child abuse. Now, I think putting masks on kids and forcing them to wear masks at all is abusive.
I don't even understand. Taping them? What does that do? What's the point?
Well, the idea is if they're taking the mask off, now they have to put tape on their face to keep the mask on.
It's like a punishment?
Here's the story. According to the story here, they highlighted a case of sixth grader Riley M., who texted her mom to tell her that a teacher had given her a warning and then handed her blue painter's tape to seal the mask to her face. According to Riley, at least one other student
was
forced to perform the same humiliating and potentially dangerous procedure because the teacher insisted that their masks were not being worn properly.
This is like cutting off a kid's hair or drawing on a child with a marker. This is totally inappropriate. I don't even understand how teachers can get away with this stuff and not be fired. Oh, I know why. It's because of the unions. It's because can't be fired as a teacher like 4 years. You're basically unfireable.
Yeah, you pretty much have to murder a child in order to get fired from a teaching job. 603-283-6160. You can weigh in on this if you're experiencing some crazy stuff going on at the government schools. Number one, you need to ask yourself why your kids are still going to these schools. I mean, that's the number one question because it's worse than it's ever been, and it's just absolute psychological torture what's going on in these places. There's more coming up here in moments. You can join us on Free Talk Live. Free Talk Live, moments remain here. If you want to join us, you can take control of the airwaves. All you gotta do is dial in here at 603-283-6160. That's 603-283-6160. We're talking about kids at school, which on its own is a terrible idea, sending your kids to a government school. Like, it was a bad idea before COVID, and now it's straight up, I think, abusive.
A government school, right?
Yeah, to government. Well, I mean, some of these private schools may be doing some of the same stuff, like with masking mandates
true.
And such.
At
least, you know, at least you're a customer at a private school and you could say, hey, I'm going to leave unless you change your rules. And if they don't change the rules, you can just leave.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. And you know, the thing is, this is what makes private schools better. It's not so much that there aren't bad private schools. It's that you have a marketplace that's competitive. So
yes.
If a school doesn't do what you think is best, you can change the school. You can't do that with a government school, not usually.
I know sometimes people are in areas where they might be able to get their kid into a different school or something like that, but it's generally going to be the same type of school, right? You know, it, just because they go to a school across town as opposed to the one closer to them doesn't necessarily mean that it's being operated any differently fundamentally.
Yeah, of course, the best bet is to get your kids out of all centralized education systems and put them into homeschool, put them into, unschooling. I think unschooling is a pretty interesting concept where the kids get to decide their own education. But according to the story here at Summit.News, a young girl in sixth grade at Chinook Middle School in Colorado Springs was told by her teacher that she wasn't wearing the mask properly, which I presume means maybe down below like the nose. That's usually when they say, oh, you could put your mask up. That's not good enough. So I'm guessing she had it like below her nose and the teacher yelled at her for it and demanded she handed her a roll of painter's tape and told her that she needed to tape the mask to her face. Her mom asserted that forcing kids to muzzle themselves in increasingly uncomfortable ways could cause long-term psychological damage. She said, quote, it's developing some sort of mentality in our children where that kind of restraint over your face is normal. Your face is you, and that's how people know you. They're just doubling down on hiding you and not letting you breathe, and it's just conformity to the extreme.
I'm always amazed at how it's not okay for somebody to physically go up to you and touch you, right? But it's okay if they tell you to do something and then punish you after for not doing it when it basically involves you touching yourself, like yourself or doing something bad to
that
yourself.
That you wouldn't
right?
otherwise
like,
do
right,
to yourself.
Right, exactly. It's like, how is that not also assault? You can't tell somebody to do something and then like—
Under the threat of whatever
under, right,
punishment.
Under the threat and then have it not be assault. It's yeah. still assault.
Another parent weighed in as well, backing up the other mom's claim. She says, my daughter said the teachers were wearing the masking tape around their wrists like bracelets, and whenever someone's mask would fall down, they would tape them. She said, it's sad our world is coming to this, and teachers would think it's okay. Now, I'm glad that some parents are feeling like they've been pushed to the breaking point on this, but look, you should have been objecting to this the first time when they were told to put masks on. Because again, it was like you were talking about earlier, Chris. It's one step towards tyranny leads to the next step. Driver's licenses yep. lead to vaccine passports, lead to facial recognition, you know, not necessarily in that order. But yeah. one step justifies the next step. Because they always say things like, well, we've been doing driver's licenses for decades. Why shouldn't we be able to do this ID card? Why shouldn't we be able to add this step? And they... From their perspective, it's completely justified from the perspective of total tyranny.
If just one more child is saved,
that's
you know,
what they say.
It's sick. It's sick. You know, you might be killing 100 kids, but if just one more child is saved, like no, but that's not actually, you're not even saving another life. You're actually killing 500 kids or whatever it is to supposedly save one life. But that,
Well, yeah, no one counts the kids that, you know, haven't killed themselves yet. But what about the ones that are messed up permanently from this? And here's an example. I've actually had this story in show prep for a while now, and this ties in because it's actually also based in the UK. So the story's from The Telegraph. Lockdowns leave half of teenagers battling anxiety and trauma. The Royal College of Psychiatrists warned that COVID pandemic has created a mental health crisis among children. So half of teenagers have been left suffering anxiety and trauma in the wake of the COVID lockdowns, according to a major review. They studied 2,000 young people, and they questioned them in depth about their feelings and experiences. Their research shows that 53% of girls and 44% of boys between 13 and 18 are suffering from trauma or PTSD in the months after the first lockdown. 60% of boys and 50% of girls of the same age were classified as suffering from anxiety. The Royal College of Psychiatrists said the COVID pandemic has caused a mental health crisis and that it's having a devastating impact, saying they've seen a 50% rise in children and teenagers showing signs of agoraphobia. You know what that is? Fear of open spaces. So they're inside their homes so much that they become afraid to even go outside. And there was like a name for this that somebody came up with that was called like cave syndrome. That people were suffering from in the United States and elsewhere, where they were forced in these cities to stay in to stay indoors, or at least, you know, that's what they were told. So they did what they were told, like obedient little serfs. instead of just going outside and disobeying and saying, you know what, my mental health is more important than your stupid lockdowns.
This whole pandemic has been like a horror movie. Like, and I feel like I'm watching it. I feel like I'm watching it from the outside because nobody around me is doing any of this. Any of these crazy things.
Right, because we're in a community of people that's like, you don't tell me what to do.
Right. And it's not like I've never seen people outside wearing a mask, but it's not like this blind obedience where everyone's doing it, you know?
Further, experts warn that rising numbers of children are showing the agoraphobia. Psychologists have reported a 50% increase in the number of young people who they're seeing who are afraid to go outside of the house or even leave their bedrooms and are shunning social interaction with others. And we know that this isn't just young people. We had a lady call this show who lives in California. I remember just within the last few weeks she's called recently. She lives in like San Diego, and sounds like she's, you know, 20s, 30s, maybe early 40s, middle-aged at the most. And she says her friends no longer get together. They only do online meetings. They will not, you know, like, you know, girls, they go out, they have their little girl nights and they go out to the bar or, you know, have a few drinks or whatever.
And they hang out.
They don't do that anymore because they're too afraid to actually be around each other.
Okay. You know, it's funny. I thought in the beginning that this would be like, okay, people can only go on like and keep this up for so long, and I'll admit that they have loosened and backed up, like things did reopen, but I did not think that people would be wearing a mask like years later, right? Like I thought, you know, okay, this would go on for maybe a year and then people would, you know, you know, maybe get a shot or whatever, and then they take the masks off.
Nope,
but I have to say, even though things have opened up a lot more, I think even places that are super locked down, except for maybe Australia, I think most places have opened up more, but they're still doing these crazy, taking these crazy measures that are so far beyond reasonable.
Absolutely. And you know what? The weather's starting to get cold again, so I hope New Hampshire doesn't go down the same road with more mandates. I don't think that the governor is going to go for a second round.
I don't think they're going to be able to. I think, and here's the thing. So what we had previously was a governor who had emergency powers that was unrestricted. And
they have restricted them somewhat,
the
right?
The governor is now restricted to emergency powers for 30 days, and then it has to be approved by the representatives.
Is that right?
Yeah. Okay. So, and previously, they did not have the support for a lot of the stuff the governor was doing. Therefore, it was only because of the law changed, because basically they would have needed 2/3 in order to override him, and they didn't have that, but they did have more than 51%.
So now it's 51%.
So basically now it's as long as they have more than 51% opposing him, he will not be able to maintain his emergency powers if he were to declare them. So theoretically he probably won't. I imagine he won't even try, but if he does try, he might be allowed to like say, okay, I have emergency powers this month, but he can't continue to do that for more than a month without authorization from the state. So,
all right. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah. So theoretically, New Hampshire should be good at this point.
But you know, some places it's not going to be good, like New York and other places like that. And that's why we keep saying, if you love freedom and you want to have a chance at more freedom in your lifetime, you gotta give up on California and Illinois and New York.
Do people really have hope for those?
Yes, it's so delusional. I was just reading on a Free State NH Twitter platform. Somebody was just responding to one of their posts saying that they know a bunch of people in Northern California that won't give up on their cities, and it's like you just love to fail. Then you don't understand strategy. You don't understand, you know, concentration and why it works. We're winning here. We are making progress. We have people who've been elected.
It's not even a little bit of progress. It's massive progress.
It's incredible success, given the small number of people, just a couple thousand and a few thousand have moved here. We're out of time for tonight. Check out Chris at freedomdecrypted.com. He's on tomorrow afternoon at 5 o'clock Eastern Time. We'll see you tomorrow online. In the meantime, freetalklive.com.
So the protection of life, liberty, and property is what the Free State Project is all about. But it's an effort to move 20,000 people who understand.
It's about demonstrating to the entire country that, yeah, we can have a free market, a truly free market.
Making it just a freer, great place to live.
It's the world's largest voluntarist libertarian community, and it's only getting bigger.
That's amazing, to be able to move to a place where other people like passionately believe in being free and independent.
What the Free State Project is managing to do, though, is to put their money where their mouth is. It's physically getting up across the country and saying, let's go someplace and let's demonstrate the power of these ideas. There's a lot of kind of philosophy that surrounds liberty. There's a lot of thinking about it and talking about it. But here in New Hampshire, people are doing it.
101 Reasons Liberty Lives in New Hampshire, a documentary by Free State Project Early Movers. Watch it free at 101reasonsfilm.com. 101reasonsfilm.com.